Introducing WonderSuite from Bluehost.com, the tool that makes WordPress wonderful for everyone. Website creation is hard, but now with Bluehost, you can answer a few simple questions about your business and goals, and the WonderSuite tools will automatically lay out your WordPress website or store in minutes. Seriously. From there, you can customize your design, pick your brand colors, and add blocks. No custom theme or coding required. You'll get content suggestions that you can keep or revise. And with Yoast SEO built in, we automatically help you get found in search engines. From step-by-step guidance to suggested plugins to an AI-powered help bot, our built-in tools make WordPress wonderful for everyone. Whether you're a beginner or a pro, you can join over 2 million Bluehost users. Go to bluehost.com/wondersuite. That's bluehost.com/wondersuite.
As humans, we're naturally driven by the search for better. But when it comes to hiring, the best way to search for a candidate isn't to search at all. Don't search, match with Indeed. When I was looking to hire someone, it was so slow and overwhelming. I wish I had used Indeed. If you need to hire, you need Indeed. Indeed is your matching and hiring platform, with over 350 million global monthly visitors according to Indeed data, and a matching engine that helps you find quality candidates fast. Ditch the busy work. Use Indeed for scheduling, screening, and messaging so you can connect with candidates faster. And Indeed doesn't just help you hire faster. 93% of employers agree Indeed delivers the highest quality matches compared to other job sites, according to a recent Indeed survey. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/podcast. That's Indeed.com/podcast. Terms and conditions apply.
Coaches Network.
Hey guys, you're now listening to the Coaches Network podcast, a podcast aimed at anyone who's passionate about athlete, talent, and personal development. My name's Coach Yas, and I'm a UEFA licensed football coach developer, and content creator. I'll be sitting down with a range of guests to discuss their journeys, their life lessons, and how you can make an impact. Enjoy. Right guys, welcome back to another episode of the Coaches Network. Joining me today for a live edition of the show, I'm joined by six-time world champion, gold medalist, international speaker now, Anna Hemmings. How are you, Anna?
Hi, Yaz. I'm very well, thank you. How are you?
Very well, thank you. Anna, for those that maybe aren't familiar with your career and your journey as an athlete, more specifically, would you mind just maybe sharing a bit of insight around what that looks like and maybe talk us through a little bit to how you got to where you are today?
So my background is in the world of professional kayaking, not the biggest of sports, not one that I was saying, mum, please take me kayaking. But I stumbled on it at the age of 8-9 years old. And, you know, it was something that my mum just happened to pick up a leaflet at a local kayak club. It was something my brother and I did as in one summer holidays. It was like, you know, do a week of kayak club, you know, go along, do it for a week, just the same way we would have done a week of tennis or basketball or something else. And we loved it. We joined the club and I was really lucky. It was a really competitive club. And they were all about racing. They were all about, you know, helping athletes to fulfill potential. And that really, you know, lended itself well to my competitive streak and my love for sport. So to cut a really long story short, which I'm sure we'll go into, but I ended up going on to compete for Great Britain at 2 Olympic Games. I won 6 world championships in marathon kayak racing, three European championships. And I went on to, so I retired from the sport in 2009. And I wanted to take all those experiences and the lessons that I'd learned from the world of sport. So many invaluable life lessons, actually, you know, everything from thriving under pressure and in challenging environments to building confidence, being a part of a high performing team, all of that. I wanted to bring those lessons and share them with other walks of life, particularly the corporate world. And so I set up a training consultancy called Beyond the Barriers, and we help individuals, teams, leaders to perform at their best, using those lessons from the world of sport combined with science and the latest up to date technology and research.
Awesome. And you know, some of the things really, yeah, the life skills that you might have learned them through your sport, but they are just transferable skills in general. And I think these are things that we can kind of all link in different industries and work together to kind of help each other develop. I want to talk about a little bit more about your own journey to start with. And adversity is obviously a big thing for you. You know, you went through a journey where you was on a bit of a, I guess, a good streak, really. And then you had a big setback yourself. Would you mind just maybe going into a little bit of detail around, you know, how that came about and what you were feeling through that? And obviously we can kind of diverge into some of your journey throughout the rest of the conversation.
Yeah, by the age of 24, I'd become a three-time world champion, and I had competed at the Sydney 2000 Olympic Games, fulfilling a childhood ambition that I'd had since I was about 8-9 years old. And I was on cloud nine. You know, I thought it was going to go on forever. I wanted to just keep on raising the bar, taking on the world. And then I was struck by this illness and my world literally fell apart. I was diagnosed with an illness called chronic fatigue syndrome. And it was a miserable illness. It hit me like a train. I was wrecked, rendered in a near permanent state of exhaustion, devoid of all energy. My muscles ached to the degree where they were painful. To the point where I couldn't even stand in the shower and hold my hands up here to wash my hair for more than 10 seconds. It was just too painful. Those were just some of the physical symptoms. Mm. The mental and emotional battle was something else. And the doctors said that there was no cure, that I should just rest and wait. And I was dropped from the team, my lottery funding cut, and I was scared. Mm. And I should just... I know that, you know, much of this audience is a sports audience. So just to be clear, this wasn't overtraining. That was the immediate assumption of the sports doctors. I had team doctors who I had support from, and that was their initial assumption, because, you know, athlete complains of fatigue and muscle ache, and, you know, I mean, it was in an endurance sport. So overtraining was the first diagnosis. But eventually I was identified and diagnosed with chronic fatigue syndrome, which is very different and affects at least 250,000 people in the UK, possibly more, because a lot don't get diagnosed, and they're from all walks of life. So yeah, it was a miserable time. You know, I did wallow in a bit of self-pity and self-misery, and I felt sorry for myself. You know, why me? Why now? I was still at the peak of my sporting career, and I felt like I still had so many ambitions left to fulfill. And I did, you know, ask that, why me? Why life is so unfair? So, and I went through that for a bit. And then eventually I realized, you know, that kind of feeling like a victim wasn't going to help me. Mm. And I eventually, you know, realized that I needed to focus on finding a solution to the illness. And I went on a mission to do that, and I did eventually recover.
Just on that, you know, there's a few key pieces in there that I want to kind of touch on. First of all, it's that piece around getting, you know, having a diagnosis. You know, you've gone and won three world championships, got those medals. How and when do you start to feel maybe some of these symptoms? Because obviously you're not going to get diagnosed immediately. There's obviously probably a build up to say, right, actually I'm not feeling too great here. And maybe, you know, even maybe getting people to kind of think that it's not just a standard case of overtraining. Did you ever fight, you know, have any, I guess, battles with people to kind of prove that, you know, this can't be overtraining, this is something else here?
Yeah, so actually the illness, when I reflect back, there were signs and warning signs that this illness was coming for about 2 years, actually, possibly longer, 3 years. And I'd had very small episodes of the what I now know were the symptoms. For between 2, sometimes 3 weeks, 4 weeks, 6 weeks periods, and it was diagnosed as overtraining. And so when I eventually got really ill in 2003 and I just stopped training and I didn't train again for 2 years, at that point I knew that it wasn't overtraining, because I had been, my coach had adjusted the training. Mm. Over that last 2 or 3 years, we'd been adjusting it. I was a lot of the time doing less training than anyone else in my group. And because I'd had these episodes of fatigue and inability to train over that period of time. And so I knew in my heart that there was something more more sinister, more profound going on than it being to do with training. And when I stopped training and didn't feel better, and after 6 months of not doing any exercise or anything physical, or, you know, really being able to do much at all and still not feeling better, then you kind of know that something else is going on. Because if you rest, I was a fit, you know, what I thought was a fit and healthy and, you know, otherwise in a really good, healthy state. If you rest, you should recover. And I followed the sports doctors, you know, advised me on a sort of slow progression pacing back to training, where you start at a very low, you monitor with the heart rate, you know, what sort of intensity you're training at. You start at 10 minutes and you build up and the intensity increases. It was a very structured program that they helped me, what they would normally give to someone who's overtraining, and it just didn't work. And I just wasn't able to get past about 20 to 25 minutes of very, very light, almost like going for a walk type pace in my kayak. And I couldn't get past that without feeling tired and exhausted, in fact, muscles aching. And that was one of the most frustrating parts of it, was that it took such a long time to get to the point where it was like, actually, this isn't about training. This is something else. And not knowing. And then it went on for 6 months before the doctors, in fact, anyone who gets the symptoms kind of has to have it for 6 months before they can say this is chronic fatigue syndrome. Mm-hmm. So you have this 6 month period where no one even knows what's wrong with you, and you do all the blood tests and you don't know. It is very little understood. It was misunderstood, I think, a lot. There's a lot of mystery and mystique about what it is and what its causes are. And therefore that's really frustrating, because people don't understand it. You look fine, like on the surface, on the outside, I looked okay. I didn't look like I was ill. And so I was frustrated to the point where I actually wished at some point that my skin was covered in spots, or that my skin was see-through even, so that people could see and understand the pain that I was going through and that they could get it.
Yeah, I mean, I guess that's kind of where my question came from a little bit. You know, did you find yourself having to kind of, no, there's actually something wrong here, can you please help me out, sort of thing? And, you know, because often, even just in general circumstances, sometimes you feel your body, you know your body better than anyone else. You know when it might be down to potentially overtraining. You know when it's not. Especially when you're saying, you know, you've played around maybe so many different ways and of training, types of training, possibly within that process, maybe time spent on different elements of training and rest periods and whatnot. That must have been a real frustration for you at times. But kind of, you know, just to build off that, then, did you find yourself, I guess, when you finally were diagnosed with it, did you find yourself there was almost a bittersweet moment, in the sense that it might have been a bit of relief, actually we know what it is now, but also having to deal with the fact that actually we know what it is, but it's still not a good thing, if that makes sense?
Yeah, absolutely. You know, it was like, oh, finally I've got a diagnosis, someone's named this. But at the other side, we don't know how to help you.
Right.
And there's no cure. And, you know, it was the sports doctors who were saying, well, just keep trying, you know, we'll give you another return to training program. And it just didn't work. And eventually I just gave up on any kind of intent of, for that period of time. I was like, I can't try and train. I can't do physical exercise. It's just not working. So I need to find another solution, because there's other things going on here. So yes, helpful to have a label, but not helpful to have no solution and no treatment.
No, definitely. Rest. Totally appreciate and understand why that made me feel that way. I guess, you know, off the back of it, something else that you touched on within the previous moments is that having now, you know, faced that situation, you've gone to the point where you're on a career high. You're probably at your best, if you like, at one point. But a real key thing that you touched on is you didn't then train for 2 years. Now that's a long time. So how does someone, you know, turn around that mindset of not training for 2 years, having gone through all that? And, you know, you said that you had a bit of self-pity, asking yourself, why me? Was there a particular moment or a series of conversations, or maybe just a conversation you had with someone, which started to really shift that mindset on, it's not about why me, but right, how are we going to overcome this? So maybe a solution mindset rather than looking at the problem, if you like.
Yeah, definitely. I mean, I think I was I was very much of that mindset from quite early on, interspersed with those moments of frustration and, you know, why me? And that, you know, the, I guess, more negative attitude. But I was fairly quick to snap out of that. And I didn't let myself really stay there for long. I knew that I needed to focus on, you know, I never, ever gave up hope that I would get better and I would get back to training. It just didn't really come into my mind that I wouldn't get back. And so I think that belief, and I think having that purpose and that reason to get back was really powerful, because it's what spurred me and reminded me why I needed to find a solution. And I, you know, when I share that with lots of people in any different walk of life, when you're overcoming in a setback or some kind of adversity, having that purpose, that goal, a clarity of direction, whatever you want to call it, it was so powerful, because it reminds you why the struggle is worth it and why you need to keep persevering. So that was part of that mindset. And I think it was crucial, because it did help me to choose an attitude of optimism, of positivity, of solution focus. And I did try lots of different solutions. And that's actually a really hard thing as well, because once you know, you're in the beginning, you're like, right, I'll try this, I'll try that. And then when none of them work and something else comes along, you're like, oh, do I want to try it again? Because nothing seems to be working. Do I want to go through the hope of, you know, the sort of, God, I hope it's going to work, hope it's going to work, and then it doesn't. And then again, hope it works, and it doesn't. That's quite hard, and to just keep trying and keep looking. But I had no choice, really. I had to keep trying things. And eventually I did discover a treatment called reverse therapy. I was introduced to this by a friend of my sponsors, an employee of one of my sponsors, a company called Pindar. And that treatment actually allowed me to recover from the illness and get better and to be able to get to a position where I could start training again.
And that's fantastic, because obviously now that you've been able to turn that around, get training again, you've then gone on to win another 3 world titles.
Yeah.
How'd you go from, you know, going from top, rock bottom, then coming back up, you know, was there some key things that you picked up during your first 3 medals on the journey to those first 3 medals that you kind of stuck with, and maybe 3 things that on reflection, having gone through what you've gone through now, that you had to maybe change and adapt differently?
I had to do lots of things differently. To begin with, it was hard getting back. It was hard emotionally and mentally getting back, I'd say, rather than physically, because I was used to training. You know, the training bit was the bit I loved, the bit I wanted to do, but it was more the fear, the doubt, the lack of confidence, that, you know, there was this overriding fear that, gosh, what if the doctors are right? What if I can't do this again? What if I'll never be able to race again? What if the symptoms come back? What if I train hard and I get ill again? You know, all of that. So I had to overcome this mental, emotional battle, which was definitely the hardest part. But once I got overcome that and really got back into quite a high level of training, then I knew I was fine. And then I just needed to train hard and work towards the World Championships. And one of the things I had to do was make sure that I had a good environment around me, that I had the right people around me. I think team is so important, but also the environment that you work in. It's so crucial, understanding what kind of environment is it that I thrive in as an individual. You know, it's different to you, it's different to the next athlete. And what is that, and how can I create that so that I can thrive and that I don't go down this path again? Who are the people that I need to surround myself with? It was really important for me to focus on recovery in between training sessions. I had a tendency to train and then rush around trying to do a million and one other things as well. And, you know, doing stuff for my sponsors or writing on a blog post or doing a keynote speech. And actually that wasn't helpful. I needed to focus on recovery in between training in order to get the best out of myself. And I learned that. And I should have been doing that. Any athlete should be doing that, to get the best out of every single training session. And I think that was a really great learning for me, because it enabled me to go and really maximize the training in every session. I learned about the importance of recovery which I think was crucial. And all of that allowed me, I believe, to train harder than I did before. So yeah, I learned some really invaluable lessons.
No, that's great to hear. And I think, you know, that reflection piece is so important in any walk of life. I'm just curious, you know, to kind of delve in deeper into that, Danny, what were some of the things that, I guess, questions or processes that you were maybe going through to kind of establish some of these things? Was it just literally, I'm going to reflect back and see what we did, or was it more specific and systems or processes in place to kind of look at what was working for you, what wasn't? Because obviously you talked there about being in part of, you know, having a team around you, having the right people around you. But also, you know, that can obviously change in terms of what that process looks like, whether you're working in an individual sport, whether you're working in a team sport, whether you're working, you know, even outside of the sporting world and just looking at in the business world, if you like.
Yeah, so I did a lot of the learnings came from this reverse therapy treatment that I did to overcome the illness. And it recognizes that there's a mind and body connection, as we know, and the symptoms are caused by a variety of different triggers. And the part of the healing process for me was understanding what those triggers were that were causing the symptoms. And it was that reflection process that allowed me to identify, these are the things that I do that my body doesn't like, that my body's telling me is not healthy for me. This is the kind of environment that's not healthy for me. This is the kind of pressures that I put on myself that are not healthy for me. These are the kind of people perhaps that I surround myself with that are good, helpful or not. And so actually it was the learnings from the illness and recovering from the illness that helped me to identify what I needed going forward. And connection was huge for me. I'm an extrovert in the sort of, you know, Myers-Briggs behavioral personality profiling. And so I need other people, I need energy. And so I need energy from other people. And so even though, yes, I raced a lot as an individual, I did need people around me. And even though I went on to compete in Beijing after the illness in the doubles. So I was part of a team, a team boat. But even racing in my single kayak, you still have a team of people around you. And I needed people to train with. They were part of my team. You know, I had my physio and my coach and the masseur, and I worked with nutritionists and sports scientists, and they're my team. Even though they're not in the boat with me and racing with me on the water, they are the team that help me, because no one gets to the top on their own. Even, you know, someone racing in the 100 meters on the athletics track. Yeah. It's an individual sport, but you have a team that help you get there. And that's exactly the same in business. You know, even if you're a one-man band and you run your own business, we all need a support network. Mm. And it's crucial, because we cannot, you know, you can get somewhere really quickly on your own, but if you want to get somewhere really far, if you want to get to the furthest place and to the highest place, then you need to have a team around you.
Definitely. And it kind of just, you know, sparking some different questions in my mind at the moment. I want to kind of look more specifically at your sport then, in understanding, obviously, it is an individual sport. You are the athlete in the center of everything. Obviously, you've got a team of people around you. But linking into, I guess, the topic of discussion here around the adversity piece, you've had obviously adversity within your own, your own fitness and your health life. But as an athlete in your sport, I'm curious to understand maybe a bit more around how your coaches or how your training was developed in a way to kind of create adversity in your training, if that makes sense, and challenges for you to deal with other than what would just naturally occur when you are out there, you know, in the boat, if you like. Was there specific things that they did to kind of manufacture, you know, challenges for you in that respect?
Do you mean sort of to try and simulate pressure situations?
Yeah, exactly.
Is that what you mean?
Yeah.
Yeah, I guess we did that. We did that a lot, in just by the nature of the training that we did. You know, well, when you do, we do a lot of time trials, and we would do. And so, a time trial is a great opportunity. It's not quite race, but it's simulating a race in that, you know, it might not even be a time trial. We might be, you know, three or four of us in a training group lining up to race. And we would be on the start line, you know, we would try and simulate it in the same way that it's a race. The start procedure would be the same. We don't have the gun, but, you know, the sound, everything would be the same, right? Line up, we're going to go and do your warm up. as you would on a race. You spend 15, 20 minutes on the water warming up, you warmed up on the bland. And so to try and simulate that race environment as much as possible, we would do throughout the winter, we would do tests in the gym, off the water, you know, running, in swimming, you know, we would be testing all the time. And so when you're, even though it's not a race, it's kind of like, right, testing's happening this week. And you've got your PBs that you did from the last testing a month ago, and you've got your target that you're trying to hit. And so there's a bit of pressure there that, God, I want to perform. I want to see what progress I've made. There's a bit of competition between the girls in the group. And so all of that is preparing you to be able to perform in the moment on the day. Yes, it's not quite a race situation, but it does help. It does create that same kind of sensation that, oh, this is, it's not just a, yeah, I'm going to be assessed here. And that's a brilliant way of simulating that. And I think it's really important to do that, because otherwise, how do we prepare ourselves? I used to do a lot of mental preparation in terms of visualization, for example. I used to do that all the time, regularly. It was a key skill that I learned from my sports psychologist. And I used to practice that. Seeing a race from start to finish, even before the race, seeing myself prepare on land, getting out onto the water, doing my warm up, and from the minute the gun goes to the end of the race, and I would see myself in different lanes. If it was practicing the 500 meters, which is the Olympic discipline, you'd be in 9 lanes, and you don't know which one you're going to be in when it comes to race day. So I would practice and I would visualize myself in lane 1, in lane 2, and lane, you know, all the way up to lane 9. I would see myself with a headwind, with a tailwind. I would see, it raining. I'd see myself coming from behind to win, see myself leading from the front, you know, all these different scenarios, so that whatever plays out on the day, you've seen it and you're prepared for it and you're ready for it. And then it just happens automatically. And that's, you know, I would try and recreate the feelings that I would have, you know. So it's not just seeing the physical situation, but actually, how am I feeling when this is playing out? How am I staying calm? What am I saying to myself? All of that, so that I can recreate, you know, like you say, that environment as much as possible. And that was one of the ways that I prepared.
Yeah, no, I find it quite interesting, because, you know, I guess. It makes me think about my own coaching, in the sport of football and the players that I work with. And one of the massive things I'm a bit headstrong on, I'm really trying to be conscious about with my players, is getting them to understand all the potential different variables that they might have to deal with in a game. So just, you know, just listening to you kind of having that visualization process, I'm conscious. When did you start using those techniques? Was it before maybe your first championships? Was it in the build up to those? Was it something that you kind of developed through that reverse therapy stuff? Or was it, and then two, beyond that, it's how often would you then have those visualizations, go through those processes, and maybe have conversations with your coaches, if you like, around whether you were actually taking in all the necessary variables in those visualizations, if that makes sense?
So I worked with a sports psychologist from the age of 16.
Okay.
So I was, you know, learning, I can't remember specifically when I learned visualization, but quite early on. So definitely before the first world title that I won in 1999, for sure I was using that then. And I continued to use it all throughout my career. And I would practice leading up to a race. You know, I'd probably be doing it most days. Other times, you know, through the winter months, maybe once a week, less frequently, but certainly regularly, because it might not even be just racing. It might be, you know, learning a new skill, so changing technique or something. If there's some technical element that I'm trying to work on, if it's the start of my race that I'm working on, or in the marathon racing, there's portages. So maybe it's a certain element in the race. Portage is when you get out of the boat and you run with it and you have to get back in again. And so, you know, the marathon race is 2.5 hours long. You can't visualize the whole race, and might pick out certain bits of it. But, you know, there's loads of research to show that if you're injured, you can still get muscle training and muscle memory from doing the visualization. So they've done studies, I think it was with basketball players, where some learnt a skill on the court, and they divided them into two groups, and one group only practiced mentally, in terms of visualization, and one group only practiced on the court. And the results were incredible, because I believe that the results of those who mentally practiced were, I don't think exactly the same, but very significantly quite close to those who had practiced on court. And so if you do both, then the impact is even greater than practicing physically alone. And so, you know, there's lots of variables that you can practice. You talk about football, and, you know, it might be the spot kick, it might be free kicks from different parts of the pitch, it might be the, you know, taking a corner. There's so many different things that you can practice. Basically, it's the pressure moments. What are those moments that are going to put you under pressure, that you get nervous for? Those are the moments that you have to practice.
No, and it's really interesting to kind of see how it maybe looks in different sport. Just, you know, just kind of before we move back into the topic, I'm really keen to kind of maybe delve a little bit deeper into your experience as the athlete itself. And seeing as this is, you know, the coaches network, and predominantly we're speaking to loads of different coaches and athletes generally, I'm interested in at what point in your journey is there a particular time that you can kind of think about where you maybe received your best coaching, and maybe share with us what that looked like?
I worked with a handful of coaches over the years, and some better than others, some different attributes that they brought. And so I couldn't say that there was a specific time that was the best coaching that I received. I think that I got a lot from different coaches, and I learned different things from different coaches. One of the things that all of the best coaches that I worked with was the feedback that they gave. Right. And recognizing that feedback is huge, as you know, in sport, that's the only way that we learn and improve. And the coaches who were the best at that, were the ones who were able to balance both positive and constructive feedback, recognizing that we need to hear both. We absolutely need to understand what we're doing wrong and how we can improve and what we need to adjust and what we need to change. And the way that that's delivered is really important.
You know how to book flights and hotels. All you're missing is a tool to plan the travel experiences you'll have once you arrive. That's why you need Viator. Book guided tours, excursions, and more in one place. There are over 300,000 travel experiences to choose from, so you can find something for everyone. And Viator offers free cancellation and 24/7 customer support for worry-free travel. Download the Viator app now and use code Viator10 for 10% off your first booking in the app. Find travel experiences for you. Do more with Viator.
As humans, we're naturally driven by the search for better. But when it comes to hiring, the best way to search for a candidate isn't to search at all. Don't search, match with Indeed. When I was looking to hire someone, it was so slow and overwhelming. I wish I had used Indeed. If you need to hire, you need Indeed. Indeed is your matching and hiring platform, with over 350 million global monthly visitors according to Indeed data, and a matching engine that helps you find quality candidates fast. Ditch the busy work. Use Indeed for scheduling, screening, and messaging so you can connect with candidates faster. And Indeed doesn't just help you hire faster. 93% of employers agree Indeed delivers the highest quality matches compared to other job sites, according to a recent Indeed survey. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/podcast. That's Indeed.com/podcast. Terms and conditions apply.
So that because some people are less receptive to it and more sensitive to it, and so delivering it in a way that people understand that this is just me trying to help you improve. That's all I'm trying to do here, is help you improve. I'm not trying to have a go at you. I'm not trying to, it's keeping it objective, so it's not about personality. This is about performance. And then recognizing that actually it's really important to give positive feedback as well, and acknowledge what you've done well. Because there was one coach I do remember working with who was very focused on telling you what you're doing wrong, which was great. And he was a brilliant technical coach, and kayaking is a really technical sport. So he's constantly on the side of the riverbank. You know, you're doing this, keep working on where your top arm is, on your rotation, on a catch at the front and straight, all of this technical stuff. which I totally needed to hear. And then one day he was really quiet on the back, and I was like, where's he gone? Where is he? And I got to the end and I was like, where were you? And he was like, oh no, you were doing it brilliantly. That was great. You know, technique, you've really gotten it. You've nailed it. And I was like, well, it'd be useful to hear that, to know that, because, you know, I'm so used to hearing all this barrage of, you know, do this. I need to hear when I'm doing it right so that I know what that feels like. I can keep doing it.
Did his approach change after that conversation?
Huh?
Did the approach change after that conversation?
Yeah, a little bit. But his natural style was just, it wasn't like in a critical way. It was just like, this is what you need to work on. Mm. But, you know, the best coaches recognize that actually feedback is a tool for confidence as well as improving performance in terms of, you know, technical ability or something. Actually, when we're constantly noticing what you're doing well, you're highlighting someone's strengths. Mm. And then when it gets to the race, you need to be able to draw on those. I need to know on the tips of my fingers what I'm great at, what my strengths are, what the elements of my race is that I can really rely on. And so unless you're being told that, you're then going to focus on all the things you do badly. Mm. And you're going to be focused on your weaknesses. So I think it's really important to get a balance, and that's what the best coaches did. And actually, to add to that, the best coaches would often, I think as I got older, would ask for my opinion, right, how I felt. And they might start with, how did you think that went? What was your thoughts? How do you where could you improve? You know, that time trial, that race, tell me your assessment of it first. And I think that's a really valuable way to start a conversation. Definitely. And just open it up.
You know, just on that, you know, that was literally going to be my next question off the back of what you were just saying is, how often did you find that maybe where the coaches were seeking your input in this feedback or this review process, if you like, and did you find, obviously you touched on there that they started to happen as you got older and later on in your career. Do you think that maybe you could have done with more of that earlier on?
Yeah, I think so. I think everyone, no matter what age you're at, wants to. Well, I think it's a good, even if you don't, because I think when you're really young, perhaps you don't know. But it's a good question to ask so that you start to do your own reflection. Mm. And just getting young athletes into that idea of, oh, let's assess, let's do something and then reflect on it. Because that's how we learn, right? And so a coach isn't always going to be there. You know, so it's useful to just start to start that process of performing and then reflecting. Mm. And learning from it. So yeah, I think that there's you can't do that too soon.
Excellent. And just kind of delve a little bit deeper into that before we kind of move it on is, do you find that there was maybe specific questions that were asked of you other than, you know, literally just what were your thoughts, Anna? What did you think? Was there any specific questions that you felt actually those were questions that really got you thinking more than others?
I guess, you know, those open questions around what went well, how could you have improved, what did you enjoy, what could you do better, what have you learned from this training session, what have you learned from the race, you know, all of those brilliant open kind of questions that get you to reflect on the performance.
Awesome. And I kind of just want to lead it back into the top, and obviously we're talking about adversity and overcoming adversity. You obviously had that challenge, you know, with the chronic fatigue syndrome, and obviously you then recovered and managed to get yourself 3 more gold medals. In overcoming that, what were some of the biggest lessons you kind of took away? And if you were maybe to pass on some tips for coaches to consider in supporting young athletes and or any athlete really, what would those be in terms of helping those athletes maybe identify that this is an adversity, this is potentially a setback they're going to have to deal with, and accepting that, but then shifting their mindset to one, like, you know, we touched on earlier, of solution and not problem focused.
You know, the steelness was the biggest setback that I experienced. In addition to that, I also lost lots of races. Mm-hmm. And, you know, you can see those as failures, as setbacks. And so I experienced a lot of that throughout my career. You know, I lost far more races than I ever won. And that's just the name of the game, right? That's sport, that's life. And I think the biggest learning is that those failures, those setbacks, they're unavoidable landmarks. You're on a standard path to success if you're experiencing failure. You know, no one who achieves at the highest level doesn't experience failure in any walk of life. And so I think that's a really important point to learn and to recognize that actually, yes, maybe I failed, but this is an opportunity to learn. You know, whether that be the illness or losing a race for me, it was all an opportunity to learn. And I think you have to learn that mindset that, yes, I'm devastated. I've lost the race. You know, I came second twice at the World Championships before I won a medal, my gold medal, and it was devastating. The first one was really exciting, but the second time was really frustrating and disappointing. But once you've had, you know, and you have to express that emotion and allow yourself time to be upset and, you know, wallow in it a little bit. But then you've got to pick yourself up and go, okay, so what can we learn from it? What went well? What do we need to do differently in the training? What are the gaps that I've got? And how do we adjust and make sure that we come back stronger next year? And we've addressed those areas of weakness. So that's the most important part about adversity. And also, you know, when I think of the illness, recognizing that all adversity, there's always something good in it. And we have to have a mindset where we choose to find the good in a difficult situation. And we all have the ability to do that, but it's making ourselves look at this situation, go, yes, it's horrible. I didn't choose it, but I can choose my reaction to it. And I can choose to look for the good in it. And I can choose to look at, you know, when I think about the illness, that illness helped me to develop stronger relationships because I started to open up to people. The illness helped me to understand the importance of connections in a high-performing team. It helped me to recognize this importance of recovery and how we need to balance energy expenditure and recovery. It taught me about, you know, I now made a career out of teaching others how to be more resilient. That's my expertise now in the business world, is all about resilience, as well as, you know, I talk about high performing teams and leadership. But resilience has been the passionate topic of mine ever since I retired from sport, because I reflect on that those setbacks and that adversity. So there's so much good that has come out of a really miserable experience. And I think that's the only way to view it when we reflect on it. And therefore, we learn to embrace adversity, recognize that this is a great advantage because now we're learning. We're learning how not to do it or learning what good can come of it. But it's a mindset shift. And I think when we can see it as that, we are then less burdened by the adversity when we experience it next time. And we've also got, if we don't learn from it, then we, next time we experience adversity, we're not any better off. Whereas if we choose to identify what good came from it, what have we learned from it, how am I stronger because of it, when we face the next adversity, and we will face another adversity because that's life, we'll be in a much better place to deal with that next challenge.
You know, no, you make some great points there, and I think certainly that, you know, that learning element is very key. I'm just curious, obviously, within that then, I'm trying to decipher a little bit what you're saying there in terms of adversity. Does it have to be learning taking place for it to be adversity, or does the learning included in that adversity mean that it's something else before it becomes adversity? Or is resilience the bit where it's adversity plus learning becomes resilience, if you like?
I'm a bit confused. I think that we become more resilient when we have experienced adversity and we've learned from it.
Yes.
Because we're all going to experience adversity. But if we don't learn from it, we don't become more resilient because we come and face against the next challenge and we're no better off. If we haven't learned how, you know, learned the lessons from the first one, it's like, you know, Albert Einstein, he says that, you know, insanity is doing the same thing over and over again and expects a different result. You're not getting, you're making a mistake, not learning from it, doing the same thing again, making a mistake again, repeating it over and over. But we become more resilient when we learn from it. Mm. And we learn that mindset that says, actually, this is failure. This is normal part of life. What can I learn from it? How can I move on? And I think that's a really important thing for athletes, is to recognize that, first of all, they need to accept it. And that's hard, because no one wanted to lose, no one wanted to have the injury or the illness or whatever it is. But we have to not resign to it, but accept that this is my current reality, and accept that. And sometimes it helps, you know, to get it off your chest and express that emotion, accept it, and then move on, and then try and reflect on it and learn from it, and then move on. And I think that's really important for athletes, is to be able to quickly move on, because otherwise you're just ruminating and you're dwelling on the experience, and that's not helpful. And you stay in that negative place, and you can't go on and achieve. So I think you accept it, you learn from it, you move on, and you build a plan to move forwards. And that's what the best way to move forwards is, to plan ahead and go, okay, right, what do we do now? This is what we've learned. Put it aside. We're done with that. Now let's move forwards. And I think that's crucial.
Speaking of learning, speaking of putting things aside, moving forward, what are some key things that you think maybe, I guess, some of the people listening to this can maybe start to consider, potentially within their own personal lives, but also beyond that, maybe tips or things they could potentially put in place to help athletes or other people to kind of overcome some of these adversities that they may be facing?
What are the tips for overcoming adversity?
Yeah, or to support others in overcoming adversity, if you like.
So I think that, first of all, it's really important to have, for anyone, whether you're in sport or business or, you know, personal life, work life, to have those trusted advisors around you who you can confide in, not just for that compassionate and sympathetic ear, that's important, but we also need people who we can debrief with. And so, you know, I talk about all that learning, and I didn't do that all on my own. I had these people around me who are all action orientated. They're not focused on identifying, you know, commiserating with me and whose fault was it, or we should have done this, you know, it was about learning from it. So the first thing is to have people, and as a coach, then that's a coach's job, or to be there and to support and to be that one to give that honest feedback and to debrief the situation. So I think that's really important. I think as a coach, it's helping athletes to create that mindset, like, you know, of what we just talked about, in terms of how do we see this, how do we look for the opportunity, look for the good in it. I think a part of that is about helping someone to recognize that they can choose their attitude. So, you know, in that illness that I experienced, I could have chosen to just remain feeling sorry for myself and, oh, there's no point. They say there's no cure. Or I could choose, you know, we can't choose our circumstances always, but we can choose how we respond, how we react to those circumstances. And I recognized that I was able to choose my attitude. And I think that's a really important learning, is that sometimes we feel like we are not in control of that, but we are. And we can choose, and we can say, right, today, what's the attitude that's going to help us? What's the attitude that's going to help me get through this challenging time? Or what's the attitude that's going to help get the best out of myself today? Is that an attitude of enthusiasm or optimism or focus? Or is it an attitude of perseverance? Or, you know, what is it? And what does that look like? How will I be acting and behaving? What will I be saying to myself if I choose this attitude? And what outcome will it bring me? And that's the motivation part. I think that, additionally, like I said right at the beginning, having that clarity of direction, that goal, is really important in the face of adversity. So reminding an athlete of what it is they're trying to achieve, that this is just a stumbling block along the way to this end goal, and we're all going to face these bumps along the road. But when we have that end goal, that clear direction that we're heading in, then we can filter out the distractions and the negativity and the rejection and the setback, and we can stay focused on what is important and how are we going to achieve this goal. I think those are some key tips that I would offer.
Awesome. Anna, we have got a question in the audience. I'm going to bring the person to the stage so they can kind of get their question in. Bear with me 2 seconds. Hi, welcome to the stage. Is it Umit, is it? Did I get that correct?
Yes, perfectly correct. Thank you, coach. Thank you very much indeed, Anna. It's just amazing to listen to you. I would like to know, because you were mentioning resilience as one of the major characteristics, you know, to be successful. And I would like to have your thought on whether the capability that underlies resilience, is that something that is acquired at an early age, or would you say that resilience can be learned at any age? Thank you. And this is Amit, I'm done speaking.
Thanks, Amit. 100% resilience can be learned at any age. Resilience is not something that you're either born with or you're not born with and you have or you don't have. It's a set of skills and characteristics and traits that we learn and develop. And I think, in fact, the more adversity that we experience, the more resilient we become. And so, you know, as a young athlete, perhaps, or as a young child, then hopefully haven't had loads of adversity. But, you know, whatever, regardless, they, you know, even as a child at school, you know, you messed up, or you, you know, didn't do well in an exam, or you, something happened in the playground, or you stumbled on your lines in the school assembly, or whatever it is. That's all little adversities that we experience. And I think as parents, coaches, advisors, it's our job to support people to help them learn from that. So absolutely we can learn resilience. I mean, this is what I do for a living in the corporate world. I run resilient leader programs. I run resilience workshops. I'm doing a talk for a group of lawyers next week at a conference all about resilience and success in the face of adversity. So we can absolutely learn resilience and what that looks like and how we develop it.
Thank you. Maybe you should offer also a special course for coaches to become more resilient. So yeah. Children, because sometimes I do see that, you know, it's actually, there's not enough done to train coaches at psychological levels, you know, to give them tools into their hand so they can empower the children, the young children they are being, you know, trusted with. And maybe that would be also something to do. I don't know, coach, how do you see that?
No, I think it's definitely a great observation. I think there is a lot of coaches out there who are probably going through some difficult things. And I think as coaches, generally, it's an egotistical world. You know, we all want to feel like we've got the right answers, and we never kind of sometimes want to accept other people have got something to add to it. So I think, you know, if we go back to Anna, what you were saying earlier around having that, you know, that solution mindset and having the right people around you, you know, I've always said you never want to be the smartest one in the room. You always want people around you that you can kind of learn off and pick ideas off. And I think you certainly over the years in some way or another have had those people around you that you've picked things up off, as well as some people you've picked things up off that you want to kind of avoid doing, if you like.
The best leaders and the best coaches that I ever worked with in sport and in business are the ones that recognize that they don't know everything. And they don't have all the answers to everything. And that's why, you know, I think of my sports team, you've got my coach. And yes, he knows a bit about nutrition. He knows a bit about, you know, physiotherapy and injury. But actually, that's not his expertise. His expertise is the training on the water. And that's why we bring in a nutritional expert, and we bring in a sports psychologist, and we bring in strength and conditioning coaches and sports scientists and all of these other experts, because the coach recognizes that, no, I don't know everything. I know quite a lot, but these people, they've dedicated their trade to this speciality. And I think the best coaches also are recognized that, let's just hear from everyone.
Yeah.
Let's get the opinion of everybody, and even the athletes. Some of the coaches that I remember, one coach I worked with, he was like, "Do you know what? You need to speak up, and I'm going to get really cross. We're going to fall out if you do not speak up and tell me if you think there's a better way to do this, or there's a better idea, or you've got a suggestion, or you've heard about something, you've read about something. You need to put it forward." And he created an environment where no idea was a dumb idea.
Yeah.
And everyone felt safe that they could put forward their idea and no one was going to get shot down and laughed at because, oh, what about doing this? What about trying that? Because he recognized that actually he wasn't brilliant at coming up with the ideas, but he was brilliant at recognizing a great idea. And you need input from other people. And so I think that the coaches with the smaller egos are actually the ones that are the most successful because they're able to put that aside and listen to other people.
100%. I think I definitely echo that. You know, it just brings back, you know, moments I've had in my journey where other coaches have been around and some of them are a bit rigid in their way of working. And you know, it's almost like, well, I've always done things this way, so it's worked for me in the past. Well, I'm going to carry on. Well, it's all right. Well, it worked for you in the past and it might have worked by chance because of the people that you were working with at the time. And that being happened to be coincidentally the best approach for those people. Maybe, maybe not. But, you know, you're right. Everyone's got some specialty. Everyone's got an area of, you know, more interest than others. So I think it's taking on board those people's experiences and understanding that everyone's been, if you like, been brought into the building for a reason. And I think it's asking different types of questions rather than what do you know, right? Why are you here? And what can you bring to the table rather than what do you know? Because like you said, as a coach, I probably have an understanding of this. I had an understanding of this. But what was the real reason I've been brought into this team? You know, it's maybe if I am the nutritionist, it's because I have a background and a specialty in experience of that. If it is someone who's maybe from the sports science team or doing some performance analysis or whatever that might be. And I think the way I've always looked at it is, well, we've got all these experts in one room. Why not use them?
Yeah, absolutely.
It doesn't mean that just because they're an expert, they're necessarily going to have all the best ideas. It might be that something that they've mentioned, which we then bounce off someone else and think, actually, let's work in this direction instead, because that might be more productive. That might be a way that works for us. So I definitely feel like it is that growth mindset and having the ability to actually accept, do you know what? I might not be the best person to answer this question or to lead on this element of the program or the development or whatever it is that you're working on. And having that self-conscious and self-awareness to actually take a step back sometimes and accept that is a key thing for me.
I think it's really important to be able to have that diverse opinion. And even if you have got a bunch of coaches who are experts in the same field, but everyone's got a different perspective and everyone sees a challenge or, you know, a situation in a different way. And you come up with the richest solution when you collaborate, when you get that cognitive diversity and you're getting input from different perspectives. I think that's really crucial. And I think that the best leaders will appreciate that and recognize that, yeah, let's bring in all these other people and what can I learn from them? And yeah, I feel like I'm an expert in my field, but what else can I learn? Because I don't know everything. I can't possibly know everything. So, you know, it's that idea, that growth mindset that, yes, I just want to learn all the time. I'm trying to absorb information like a sponge, soaking up the information everywhere I go. You know, when I do a lot of keynote speaking and I go to a conference and there's a whole lineup of speakers. I want to be there from the start of the day to the end of the day, because this is a brilliant opportunity to go and listen to all these other brilliant speakers and learn from them. And other people are paying for this. And I'm getting this opportunity. So let's just absorb. And, you know, that the coaches that I worked with, you know, they'd be going round at where we turn up at an international event. They'd be going talking to all the other coaches and trying to find out, oh, so what are you doing? And how are you doing that? And some are more open than others. But trying to constantly learn what are other people doing and how can I improve what I do? Nice. And that growth mindset is really important.
Great point. And I was literally speaking to someone just last night and around the idea of experts and how to, you know, how they get heard. And obviously within that same keynote speech or that keynote conference, if you like, you're probably going to have some people that probably aren't well known, but they're probably very, very knowledgeable. They've got a lot of expertise that you might, just because they haven't got necessarily a big brand behind them or a leading organization supporting them on their projects and whatnot. But they have got fantastic information. So I think it is definitely an opportunity to kind of learn. And I'm really conscious of time. But Umit, first of all, thank you very much for your question. We really appreciate that. And I'm sure hopefully it did answer your question nonetheless. But I am conscious of time, and I kind of just want to start to look to wind down now and just find a little bit more about what you're doing now. Is there any particular events coming up for you that maybe people can kind of look into and consider exploring to kind of find out more about this adversity piece or even some of the other work that you cover?
Yeah, so I work predominantly in the world of sport. In the world of business. I have done a little bit of work with athletes one-to-one, coaching on that, on the performance side in terms of the mental game, building resilience, building confidence. But most of my work is in the business world. I run a training consultancy, as I said. You know, resilience is a massive theme for us. I run an open public program quarterly that's called the Resilient Leaders Toolkit. So it's all about developing resilient leaders. And that can be, you know, predominantly it is business people, but we would be really open to sports coaches or leaders in the world of sport, because the lessons are the same. And in fact, I'm taking lessons from the world of sport and bringing them to the workplace. But whether it's sport or business, it's all about delivering results through people and developing people to be the best that they can be. So I do work one-to-one as a leadership coach. And I do a lot of, I'm open and available for new clients on coaching. And I'm a keynote speaker. So I'm currently doing a lot of virtual talking, obviously, but hoping that to be back in the real room on the real stage very soon, at some point this year, maybe. So I do a lot of keynote speaking on themes, you know, sharing my journey, using my journey to bring to life messages around resilience and confidence and high performing teams, leadership. And yeah, all of those things that help us to achieve high performance. And you can find me on annahemmings.com or my training consultancy, beyondthebarriers.co.uk, or on LinkedIn.
Awesome. I was literally going to be my next question. Where can people go to maybe find out a little bit more or get in touch with you personally? Anna, just, you know, it's been a fascinating conversation today already. And I'm sure there's going to be a lot of things. I've certainly taken away a lot of this, and it's certainly given me a lot of food for thought. And I'm sure we could probably talk all day about adversity and how and different ways of which you kind of develop and overcome it. But I'm conscious, you know, it is the Coaches Network, and you know, just by having, you know, this conversation with me now, and albeit virtual, you know, you've made yourself part of the Coaches Network now. I was kind of just curious to know from your perspective, what is the message that you kind of want to leave with the rest of the community?
The message that I want to leave, on top of everything that we've discussed already, I guess I would just reiterate some of the things that we've talked about, that, you know, we can build that resilience. I think that's really important to be able to triumph in the face of adversity. I think that as a coach, it's really important that you're there for athletes to be able to support them, because we know from research that the strength of our resilience is based on the strength of our relationships and our connections. So I think that's a crucial role that a coach plays, is to be that support, to be that that relationship that you can rely on, and know that in those difficult times, you've got someone who you can reach out to, who you can express that frustration, those emotions, whatever it might be, who can be there to debrief with, who can be there to provide honest feedback, who can be there to, to provide that supportive, compassionate ear, to help create a plan to move forward, all of that. And I think that's a brilliant role that a coach can play.
Awesome. So there's no I in team, essentially. I think it's about building.
No I in team.
Okay, no, I think you hit the nail on the head, Anna. And identifying what support is needed and where best to kind of get that. But Anna, look, thank you again for your time today. It's been very, very, like I said, it's been a fascinating conversation for me. And I'm sure it has been educational and entertaining for everyone listening in as well. I want to thank you again for your time, and take care.
Well, there you have it, guys. Another episode of the Coaches Network podcast, where our aim is to bring the world of athlete, talent and personal development together to just one platform. And you can help us with that mission right now by sharing this episode or any of your favorite episodes with everyone that you can think of. You can tag us in those mentions as well on Instagram at The Coaches Network or on Twitter at The Coaches Net. We look forward to hearing from you. Let us know what you thought about today's episode. And until next time, guys, take care.
As humans, we're naturally driven by the search for better. But when it comes to hiring, the best way to search for a candidate isn't to search at all. Don't search, match with Indeed. When I was looking to hire someone, it was so slow and overwhelming. I wish I had used Indeed. If you need to hire, you need Indeed. Indeed is your matching and hiring platform, with over 350 million global monthly visitors according to Indeed data, and a matching engine that helps you find quality candidates fast. Ditch the busy work. Use Indeed for scheduling, screening, and messaging so you can connect with candidates faster. And Indeed doesn't just help you hire faster. 93% of employers agree Indeed delivers the highest quality matches compared to other job sites, according to a recent Indeed survey. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/podcast. That's Indeed.com/podcast. Terms and conditions apply.
If you own a vehicle with less than 200,000 miles and have an auto warranty about to expire or no warranty coverage at all, listen up. CarShield has a low-cost, month-to-month vehicle protection plan that covers more parts than ever. Visit carshield.com/audio to find out how you could pay almost nothing for covered auto repairs. Drivers who activate this vehicle protection today will also receive free roadside assistance, free towing, and car rental options at no additional cost. Get your free quote today at carshield.com/audio. That's carshield.com/audio.